He was giving her a curious look. "Tranquility says it's not very likely," she told him.
"Oh."
He took the bottle back. "But this constant awareness of the ruin ring is still a kind of unnatural motivation. Tranquility worries about it, so do you. It's more of a gentle reminder, like a crucifix reminds us of what Christ suffered and why. It means I don't suffer a lack of faith in the work the research team does. I know we have to find the reason." "Why, though? Why do you and your father and your grandfather all consider it so important?" "Because the Laymill were ordinary." That got through to him, she saw. A frown crinkled his brow below the sticky strands of tawny hair. "Oh, they have a substantially different body chemistry, and three sexes, and monster bodies, but their minds worked along reasonably similar lines to ours. That makes them understandable. It also makes us dangerously similar. And because they were at least equal to us, if not more advanced, technologically, whatever it was they came up against is something that one day we are also going to encounter. If we know what it is, we can prepare ourselves, maybe even defend ourselves, provided we have some warning. That's what Michael realized, his revelation. So you see, he never really did abandon his duty and commitment to Kulu. It's just that this was the only possible way he could hope to safeguard the kingdom in the ultra-long term. However unconventional, it had to be done." "And is it being done? Is your precious team any closer to finding out what happened?" "Not really. Sometimes I get afraid that we are too late, that too much has been lost. We know so much about the Laymill physically, but so little about their culture. That's why we nabbed your electronics. That much stored data might be the breakthrough we need. We wouldn't need much, just a pointer. There's only two real options."
"Which are?"
"They discovered something that made them do it. Their scientists uncovered some fundamental physical truth or law, or a priest group stumbled across an unbearable theological revelation, that death cult you mentioned. The second option is even worse, that something discovered them, something so fearsome that they felt racial death was a preferable alternative to submission. If it was the second, then that menace is still out there, and it's only a matter of time until we encounter it."
"Which do you think it was?"
She squeezed her legs just that fraction tighter against him, welcoming the comfort his physical presence bestowed. As always when she thought about it, the brooding seemed to sap a portion of her will. Racial pride aside, the Laymill were very advanced and strong. "I tend to think it was the second, an external threat, mainly because of the question over the Laymill's origin. They didn't evolve on any planet in this star system, nor did they come from any local star. And from the spacecraft fragments we found, we're pretty sure they didn't have our ZTT technology, which leaves a multi-generation interstellar arc as the most likely option. But that's the kind of ship you only use to colonize nearby stars within 15 or 20 light-years. And in any case, why travel across interstellar space just to build habitats to live in? There's no need to leave your original star system, if that's all you're going to do. No, I think they came a very long way through ordinary space for a very real reason. They were fleeing. Like the Tarathka abandoned their homeworld when its star blew up into a red supergiant."
"But this nemesis still found them."
"Yes. Has anyone found remnants of an Ark ship?"
"No.
If the Laymill did travel to Merchusco in a slower-than-light ship, then they must have arrived around 7 to 8,000 years ago. To build up a population base of 70,000 habitats from 1 or even 10 ships would take at least 3,000 years. Apparently the Laymill didn't have quite our fecundity when it comes to reproduction. Such an Ark ship would have been very old by the time it reached Merchusco. It was probably abandoned. If it was in the same orbit as the habitats when they were destroyed, then the secondary collisions would have broken it apart."
"Pity."
She bent over to kiss him, enjoying the way his hands tightened around her waist. The hazy blue shadow images she had poached from Tranquility's sensitive cells, the private cries she had eavesdropped through the affinity bond, had been borne out. Joshua was the most dynamic lover she had ever known. Gentle and domineering, it was a lethal combination. If only he wasn't quite so ruthlessly mechanical about it.
A little too much of his pleasure had come from seeing her lose all control. But then that was Joshua unwilling to share. The life he led, the endless casual sex offered by Dominique and her set, and the false sense of independence incurred from scavenging, left him too hardened for that. Joshua didn't trust people.